Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between what's personal in our lives, our health, our well-being, and everything that's going on in our world, in our communities, in our society, and in the ecology of planet Earth. We talk about the human body, the body politic, and the ecology of the planet every week here on Connect the Dots. I'm a long-standing journalist of health, food, and the environment, policy, activism, advocacy, and everything else that is interconnected in our world to making a better world. And of course, we're in an entirely new time this year. For many years, I have been writing and trying to kind of alert people to some of the things that need to be addressed in our society in order for us to have healthy lives, our children to have a healthy future, and our world to remain healthy and habitable for human beings. And this year, some of the challenges that, you know, we haven't wanted to face up to or address or didn't know how to are really coming to the fore. So we're taking a deep dive, as usual, here in Connect the Dots into exploring some things that might, you know, both what's going on that really needs to change, we cover on the show, as well as some really interesting and exciting opportunities to make constructive changes. And that is what we are going to be focusing on today with a returning guest that I've had on the show before. We last welcomed director, executive producer, journalist Lulu Freistadt. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that terribly, and you can correct me. You know, to the show, we had two shows with Lulu back in August because the work she's doing is that important, and now it's ever more timely. Lulu has been looking into election integrity and the issues that surround the lack of it, the presence of it, what we need to have it for a number of years, starting with a film that she produced, I believe it about 2004 or 5, called Holler Back, and we'll be discussing what that means and what that film is about, because it's as timely as ever, if not more so, as well as her work this year with a variety of groups on the issues of election integrity to the fore very much right now because of a recount that is actually going to be happening in, you know, the very time period in which we are recording and airing this show. So I'm so excited to have Lulu Freistadt back with us again on Connect the Dots now for the third time. Welcome back, Lulu.
Allison, thank you so much, and thank you for your support and your attention to these issues. I think we both agree they're really central to any kind of transformation that we want to see in our culture.
This is absolutely true because, you know, we've just had a year of a rather, for many people, a lot of people, most of the people that I know personally, a very painful election process and election result. I think we can safely say that. There's probably a very wide swath of people who feel that way about it. And, you know, I always feel about everything, one of the things that we know from all forms of social science, from sociology, political science, psychology, is that if you don't have a good process, you don't have a good result. When you were on the show earlier in the year, we were talking about problems with the primary, and lo and behold, we now have had, you know, possible issues, which we'll be discussing today, with the actual presidential election. Let me just backtrack for a second and give listeners a little bit of a background on Lulu. She's an Edward R. Murrow award-winning journalist and documentary filmmaker. I don't know how many people today even know who Edward R. Murrow was, but he really was the dean of journalists during the World War II epoch. And in one of my former incarnations at CBS News, he was literally the reigning deity there. He wasn't working there during my time. He had passed to the beyond. But, you know, the memory of his outstanding leadership and integrity as a journalist was very much, you know, the high watermark that all all working at that network and many other networks remembered. So it's quite an honor to get an Edward R. Murrow Award. Lulu was on the editing team of a film called Gideon's Army, and an Emmy-nominated documentary that follows the personal stories of public defenders in the Deep South. She has worked in network news as an editor for CBS Evening News, Nightline, Sunday Morning. I worked for Sunday Morning, too. The Today Show and Good Morning America, spanning several different of the networks. And she also has done a whole host of independent documentary work. Her production company, Sugarworks, has done a whole host of fascinating different things. And in producing Hollerback, the subtitle of which is Not Voting in an American Town, this was really very prescient because although the whole issue of election integrity problems of a whole host of different kinds that we'll discuss on today's program is new to many people. In fact, it's really not new at all, and there's a whole body of wisdom and understanding and very serious people looking at this. Lulu is a filmmaker who has been bringing this to attention. So delighted again to have you back here, Lulu, and listeners will be pointing you to where you can see the Hollerback film as well as find some of the research and studies that we'll be talking about on this program. So let's just kind of dip into this. When you first began looking into election integrity issues this year, it was in the primary campaign. Now there have been questions, about the election itself, and in fact, a recount is underway right as we speak. Can you briefly orient listeners to the different kinds of election integrity issues that could lead us to a scenario where there is uncertainty and need for counting to determine, the outcome of a presidential election vote in several states as well as nationwide potentially, depending on how all of that falls out?
Well, the problem is that we don't have a real verifiable way of knowing if the vote count is accurate or not right now. And that is the main problem. We don't have accurate, secure, transparent elections. And that's what we really need to address that going forward. So I know we're in the midst of a crisis right now because people do not necessarily have faith in the results of the election. And there are very few protocols in place that could give them faith because many of the machines that people voted on are electronic machines. Some of them, for example, in Pennsylvania, where they're going to try to do a recount, Pennsylvania doesn't have paper backups. So doing a recount in Pennsylvania is actually going to be very challenging. The machines do make certain images that we might be able to access if Jill Stein winds up pushing for that. The direct record electronic machines make something called a bitmap image, I've been told, that actually is a unique image for each vote. So we might be able to get inside the machinery, inside the software of these machines, and get some detailed information. That's going to take some digging. Right now in Wisconsin, they're going to be most likely hand counting the votes in each county, and that I think will be refreshing. I know people have concerns about whether or not that hand count is going to be objective, whether it's going to be transparent. There's a lot of concern about who's paying for the hand count. Jill Stein raised $6.5 million very rapidly. And the question is whether or not that money came from, large sources.
Before we go into that kind of interesting question, let me just kind of take a step back for us. I realize I sort of plunged us in there at the deep end, but many people, it's coming as a big surprise. I know that when we were going around and saying, look, there are some discrepancies that look like the primary outcome is not happening within statistical curves that really seem sort of valid and realistic, which cast doubt on the actual primary vote outcome. A lot of people were calling that a conspiracy theory, no nobody, you know, people, the idea that, you know, somehow our election results could be tampered with was just a sort of shocking and almost impossible idea that, you know, many, many people found it really hard to entertain and would believe that, you know, you were sporting a tin hat if you brought up such a question. And now, you know, many more people, I think, have woken up to this issue. You know, but, you know, just 6 months ago, just a year ago, I'd say, you know, the majority of the people I know would be, this is impossible. How can you even question that? They couldn't possibly be tampered with. The vote could not possibly be tampered with. Can it be tampered with? How can it be tampered with?
Well, I mean, there are computer scientists, very reputable academic computer scientists like Andrew Appel at Princeton or J. Alex Halderman at the University of Michigan, who have demonstrated for years that the electronic voting machines are highly vulnerable. So I don't think there have been any questions about whether or not you could tamper with the vote. Whether or not the vote has been tampered with is a question that nobody really wants to touch. It's basically like the third rail. And when you touch that as a journalist or as a politician, that's when people put the tin hat on you and say, like, you know, you're crazy. You've fallen down the rabbit hole. And what happened this year, there were two things. One, Trump, who wound up being the candidate for one of the major political parties, was somebody who did believe that the elections were being rigged and said so publicly on a regular basis. And that made it so that people had to at least address the question. Previously, the media wouldn't even talk about it. So they had to talk about it. And the second thing that happened was that there were some very large, very public hacks, and particularly the hack of the DNC email and the hack of Clinton's team, John Podesta's emails and computer got hacked. And because those were so public, it became quite evident that you could easily hack these organizations, and it made people more aware of how easily you might be able to hack something like, you know, the voting results. And there actually were registration databases in two states that were hacked, Illinois and one other state, where right before the election, those offices admitted publicly that their registration databases were attacked. So it was clear that you could hack. It was clear that registration and voting areas were being targeted. And it was clear that one of the candidates believed that the results were hacked. So all of a sudden you have a perfect storm where people go, oh, this is real. This is happening. So now we've moved into that territory. But the question is, the problem is that we don't have really much more evidence. We're still in a very speculative environment. And that is really unfortunate. People just don't know what to believe. And most of what people believe is based on what they want to believe. They want a certain candidate to win, and so they believe what that candidate says. And even academics and journalists and news organizations who are supposedly supposed to be evidence-based are often really being swayed by what they want. Do they want Hillary Clinton to win? Okay, well, let's do a recount. Maybe the elections were tampered. Or do they, you know, do they want Donald Trump to win? Oh, now maybe the results are solid. So it's unfortunate, but it's very hard to move this into an evidence-based dialogue because it's very hard for people to let go of what they want to happen. And so what we have to do is we really have to control our impulses to say, you know, oh, this person is, you know, horrendously evil, or this person couldn't possibly be involved in this. They're always, you know, they're above any kind of unethical behavior, and really try to look at the evidence. And that's why I am really pleased that we are doing a recount in these three states, regardless of, you know, where the money has come from. It may be money that, you know, came from a large donor or from the Clinton campaign, but the money is now in Jill Stein's hands, and Jill Stein has said that she wants to do a recount that focuses on hand counts and what the actual votes look like. So, I mean, let's give her the benefit of the doubt and let's try to have an accurate recount. And I know that there are a lot of election integrity activists working in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a very healthy election integrity movement, people who have been there for years working for accurate elections. And one of the people that I've been speaking with, Karen McKim, she works at the Wisconsin with Wisconsin Election Integrity, I certainly encourage people to go to that website and to be getting information from them. And to be following this, if they can go to Wisconsin and work as an observer, they need people there. The recounts are then going to be moving to Pennsylvania and Michigan. I'm sure they will need volunteers there. So what we need is for people to try to set aside their partisan differences right now. Let's focus on gathering evidence. Let's look at the ballots. Let's look at 100% of the ballots and count them as objectively and in as public and transparent a fashion as possible. And let's see what we find. Let's compare those results to the results of the machines. This is really one of the first times that we're going to have a complete count, hand count, that we will be able to compare to a machine count. And let's see what we find. Maybe we're going to find that the machines all counted correct, you know, in an accurate way. One thing that we're already finding is that there is human error involved. So there was one county already that Karen emailed me this morning about where they actually, in their final certified results, had transmitted 484 votes accidentally represented as 84 votes. So there were 400 votes for Trump. Those were for Trump in the certified results that got lost. And that was a human error. That was an error that happened just in terms of someone transcribing the information in the final, you know, in when they were putting down the information for the final certified results. 484 turned into 84. And Karen McKim, who is a very conscientious person, meticulously going through, checking the county's numbers with the final numbers, found it. So she called them, and, you know, now they're scrambling and they're trying to fix those numbers. But, you know, what she said to me is, well, why do we not have these basic quality controls in place to begin with? Is that that shouldn't be her job as an independent citizen to be going through and checking these numbers. It's surprising. But some of this stuff is just, we do not have a process right now that is really set up to very carefully and meticulously count the votes and then check and audit that the votes are all counted correctly. And that's what we need to move toward. We need to move toward a less partisan environment around our elections. So right now, the elections are all administered by partisan election officials who sometimes are actually elected. You know, these secretary of states can be elected in some states, and they are highly partisan sometimes. So you don't want your elections administered by highly partisan individuals. Most democracies around the world have elections administered by nonpartisan officials. That's already one thing that we could do that would take this out of such a, you know, charged atmosphere. We could put the elections in the hand of nonpartisan officials. And then there are a number of other things that we could do. We could move toward hand-counted paper ballots in the counties that are small enough for that to be manageable. And in the places where they feel that they need mechanization, we can do things like count the ballots with one thing that they're doing in some places is they project the ballots onto a screen, like a large screen in a room, so an entire room full of people can see the ballot. And that way you can count ballots rapidly and everybody can see what's going on. That's a very transparent way of counting ballots. We can also photograph ballots, itemize them, and put them online so that crowdsourcing, you know, large groups of people can count ballots online. And that you could even in places like California where you have these, you know, dozens and dozens of referendums and lots of people on the down ballot. If you went to a situation like that where you photograph, itemize and photograph ballots and put them online, you could even get hand counting or, you know, very meticulous counting of very complex ballots like the ones they have in California. So right now we have to do the best job that we can meticulously hand counting any races that we can. If that's going to be, you know, Jill Stein has petitioned for Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, let's meticulously hand count those. Let's try to put our partisanship aside. Let's look at the evidence. Let's look at the data and see what the votes say. Going forward, let's move now, while people are passionate about this, let's take that energy and put it into reform. That means we're putting together a platform of ideas, a platform of comprehensive election reform that everybody who is concerned about these issues can get behind. And I actually have been putting together a conference call every Sunday at 3 p.m. And I call it the Honest Elections Conference Call. And you can join on Sundays at 3 p.m. Usually we go for about an hour or an hour and a half, and we're talking about these issues. And one of the things that I think we'll be talking about next Sunday is this platform. We've already put together a platform of about, I think, 13 to 15 concepts that we want to get behind that would create a comprehensive election reform agenda. So I'm just pulling up the number for the conference call. And
I post about that as well on my Facebook page. The information is on hollerbackfilms.com. So you can also, if you get a pen ready, because Lou's about to do the number, but also if you don't happen to have a pen there, you can also find it and participate every Sunday afternoon. The calls are extremely informative. I've been on several of them. I was on one this last week. Highly recommended. Because also what you're doing throws light on, the subject. It's kind of like there's a lot of passion. There's a lot of heat. There are very good reasons for that. Certainly understand and support that. But also it has to kind of work for everyone. This is a democracy. We do have, we certainly have had a very challenging election this year, but, that may continue going forward. And the best guarantee that we get the results we want, not only in presidential elections, but, for every advocacy cause, or every concern that we have about environment, about health, about the right food, about the right policies to support all of these, every single one of these depends on calling our legislators, leaning on Congress, getting the right regulations. So, there's really nothing that can happen in public policy on any level, federal, executive, legislative, federal, state, or local, if we can't, count on having an accurate vote. Do you have the number there, Lulu?
The number, 712-451-0293. The access code is 568-325. That's 568-325. And if you need to look at that again, you can go to my website. My website is hollerbackfilm.com, and I'll talk about that a little bit, why it's called that. Hollerbackfilm, that's H-O-L-L-E-R-B-A-C-K film.com, and click on my blog, and you'll see the post there. And my film was called Hollerback, Not Voting in an American Town. And what Hollerback is about is to me, the very basic underlying concept of democracy, which is that we can all holler back. That is us saying to our elected representatives, we have a voice here. We are going to holler back at you. And it's a dialogue. It has to go back and forth. We elect representatives, and then they talk to us and find out what we want and what we need. And then, we give our voices and we give our opinions and we give our ideas, and hopefully they can listen to that and create policies that reflect our voices. And right now that's literally not happening. They've done studies literally tracking whether or not policies that the vast majority of people support are becoming policy. And in fact, they are not. What is becoming policy are the ideas that financial elites and special interests support. There was a study about this, I'd have to look it up right now. The BBC covered this, and it kind of got a big boost. I mean, it went around the web for a while, and I can send you that link, and you can post it on your site if you want. But I'm sure you're aware of this.
Yes, I've posted it in the past, but it always bears a reminder, because we're saying things. For example, I've been doing a lot of coverage of the protest against the Dakota Access Pipeline, and one of the most common things that people say is, why isn't President Obama speaking up? And, why isn't he intervening to protect the water protectors and peaceful protest from mercenary military forces that are physically attacking them and causing them harm? People are shocked and appalled. There are petitions to the president calling the White House. People are doing all of the traditional things that people have always done and hoped and believed would work, and they're not getting a response. And, you know, this is because of the issue of, you know, A, money in politics, as well as the fact that the officials who were elected, both because they are, you know, funded by outside interests who, you know, contribute heavily and mightily to their campaigns, but also because, you know, there are these issues with our, you know, having confidence in whether, you know, our vote is counted appropriately as it should be. And so, you know, so people are saying, well, why isn't he listening? And then, you know, at other times people say, well, let's put their feet to the fire. We're not going to have very much success putting anyone's feet to the fire or making our elected officials responsive unless it is we, the people, who through an election integrity process have the vote and the say in the matter. So
right.
We're trying
so
to ensure that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a real problem. If your vote is not being counted accurately, and in fact, what's determining the outcome of the election is some third, you know, some outside organization that is manipulating the votes, and if the candidates are aware of that, which they very well may be, then they are not going to be accountable to you. They are going to be accountable to whoever manipulated the totals and got them in office. And, mm-hmm. you know, that goes along with, you know, whatever money is flowing into their coffers. They certainly are going to be more responsive to those financial interests. But what is clear, and this is what I really focused on in my film, The Holler Back, Not Voting in an American Town. What is clear is that those in power are not really interested in as many people voting as possible. They give lip service to that idea. But actually, the people who are voting now, or the system as it stands now, whoever is determining the outcome of these elections, that is the system that put them in power. And therefore, that is the system, the status quo, that they are going to continue to support. So if people think that these things are going to change naturally, that there is going to be some sort of wave of outrage that is just going to sweep election reform into legislation, and that these things are just going to change because, my God, it's shocking, and how could this go on? Please, please wake up. Do not think that this is just going to happen automatically because things are this bad. We are not going to have change unless we demand change. We are not going to have change unless we all get involved in the nitty-gritty of this, which is a lot of work. It's not just, you know, sending stuff out on Twitter and checking your Facebook page. We are going to have to organize. We have to make charts. You know, there is already a chart created of every legislative count, like every jurisdiction, every election jurisdiction in the country, and verified voting has put this together, and it has the contact information of every election commissioner, every county commissioner in every election jurisdiction. And we are going to have to, once we make a platform and agree to a platform, which is going to be hard to get everybody on board with a certain set of principles, then we're going to have to take that platform and start really pushing it into every community. We go to these county commissioners, and people are going to have to get involved locally in their elections and demand that these election processes are changed, that we have transparent, accurate elections. It's not going to happen unless you personally get involved and start doing it in your community. That is how it's going to happen. So I really encourage people to, like, join the calls or join whatever election integrity organization is in their community. And if there isn't one you know of, then, you know, and you can't find one, then form one. We have to get connected, and we have to, this is the time to make this happen, not a year before the next presidential election. Now is the time.
So, you know, this is a tremendous organizing opportunity. At the same time, you know, many people have questions about, which you alluded to earlier, Lulu, about how the recount has come about, what the, you know, up or downside of that may be. People in the Green Party are, you know, complaining that it did not occur as a result of a Democratic vote within the Green Party, and many people in the Green Party don't support it and don't feel that, you know, they feel that, you know, the money coming to the Green Party for the recount could possibly have come from some deep pocket somewhere, whether Clinton or Clinton, her donors, or, you know, who knows exactly where. So there is some controversy about this. So I just want to kind of point that out. As you mentioned, you know, what you're saying is that the upside of this is that it's an organizing opportunity for more people to be aware of the issues with election integrity and to get involved on both a national and a state level. You know, so, you
I
know,
think,
you...
Yeah, I think also, Allison, people don't realize how far back this goes. I think people who are, a lot of people that I know who voted like for Sanders in the primary, this is literally the first time they've been involved in the political process. They don't know that quite likely the election was stolen in 2004, that quite likely the election was stolen in 2000. They don't know that we have these bursts every 4 years or every 8 years where we have what is really highly questionable, very like potentially unethical behavior around our elections year after year, and there's a sort of a burst of outrage, a burst of energy, and then it just all goes away and people move on and just go back into, you know, whatever their issue is that they're working on. And what we really need to do is understand in a very deep way that there is no issue that is more important right now for our country's survival than cleaning up our election process. This needs to become your number one political issue. If it's not already, it has to become your number one political issue. And we have to work together. The progressives or the libertarians or the Republicans or the Democrats, nobody is going to be able to solve this problem in their own isolated community. We are going to have to work together. There are people all across the political spectrum who are absolutely repulsed right now about what is happening and what has happened. Whether you won, whether you lost, whatever, nobody that I have spoken to, and I do not, I really don't, I think there is a universal disgust right now, not only nationally, but internationally, with our elections process. We have to make this our number one priority.
So what you're saying, Lulu, is the current recount situation is great as a wake-up call, but it's really, the outcome of it is uncertain. People getting involved on a partisan basis, you know, that they're either for or against it, is, you know, we need to kind of broaden, you know, everyone has a right to their stance on that based upon their partisan, you know, wishes for the election and stuff like that. But that above and beyond and through that, let's not just, you know, focus purely on the recount. Let's get involved in the whole issue and not just do so in this, you know, last ditch, can we save this particular election outcome way, but really make this something that we commit to, that we plan, that we, you know, that we really seriously engage with in our local constituencies and all the rest of it. Could you sketch out for our listeners what some of, you know, one of the things that also I think happens for people is they get a bit overwhelmed by, you know, and confused between voter fraud, voter suppression, gerrymandering, election fraud. I mean, there are so many different ways that we don't get a fair vote. People are critiquing the Electoral College because of the discrepancy between the popular and the electoral vote, you know, the Electoral College vote, the electoral vote. You know, can you sketch out the kinds of things that people in the election integrity movement that, you know, have been looking at this over several decades are really highlighting as the key things that people need to be looking at and addressing and understanding?
Absolutely.
And yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And yes, the recount is important in terms of this election, but let's look at it, as you said, as the first step in our longer term reform. So let's use the recount as a way to explore having an accurate hand count. in three states, if it's going to be in three states, can we have an accurate, secure, transparent hand count in three states? Let's try it. Let's see what the results are. Let's gather the data. Let's compare the hand counts to the machine counts. This is the first step in our longer-term process of getting accurate, secure counts all over the country. So let's think of it as a first step in election reform, and let's approach it in that way, in as nonpartisan way as possible. Let's try to have an accurate, transparent recount. And then the first step in terms of election reform long term is that we need accurate, secure counts across the country. And the most election integrity activists believe that this is some form of either hand counting, which would be voter marked, hand counted paper ballots, or hand counting in conjunction with some kind of equipment. So, for example, in Columbia County, they have optical scan machines, and they run all the ballots through the optical scan machines, and then after that, they have very secure chain of custody. So they keep the ballots in Ziploc sealed bags that are always under the supervision of different political parties, and those bags are locked in a room that you can't get into unless both parties have the key to it. They do it. They have a two-party system there, but if more parties are active, you would get three parties or, you know, multi-party involvement. So basically, you have supervision of the ballots at all times, and then they bring those ballots out, and in public, they count the ballots 100% by hand. That's what they do in Columbia County. So that's a system where they have optical scan plus 100% hand counting of the ballots. In addition, we've done statistical analysis of their elections, and we found their statistical analysis to look like a regular statistical pattern. So that's a third redundancy. Other systems that could be implemented are what I talked about before, where you have a ballot that is photographed and then put online. What's great about a photograph of a ballot as opposed to a scanner is that you can see the ballot at all times, and you can see that the ballot that you're looking at is actually the ballot image that gets created. It's not put face down in a scanner where it disappears or becomes some sort of electronic image. A photograph is something that you can see, and you can see that the new image that's created is in fact the same image, identical as the ballot. And if you do that at the same time that you're, say, projecting these on a large wall in a public, you know, in a public room that anyone from the public and the media can attend, then you have another layer of redundancy where those ballots are counted in public and then could be crowdsourced, counted again online if people wanted to do that again. So we need to move.
So in that way, somebody's
public
provisional ballot is not thrown out. Someone's name is not changed. If there's a ballot where there are missing candidates, then, you know, that can be seen. You know, so it's not all just kind of happening somewhere and one individual is left saying, you know, my candidate was not on my ballot, or, you know, there are instances that people have claimed where, you know, there people were whiting out ballots. Also, there are situations with the machines themselves. You know, somebody said to me recently, and I'm curious whether you think this is true or not. Someone said to me, well, it wasn't really possible to rig or hack this election electronically, for example. That couldn't possibly happen because there are so many different states, each with different rules, and how could someone get into the machine boxes anyway? You know, so these are the kinds of questions, you know, that I get as feedback from people, you know, when they, you know, wonder what could really be going on or think that perhaps nothing could actually be going on. Your comments
People should realize that you do not need to hack every jurisdiction in the country in order to change the outcome of the election. I mean, as we can see, three states, that's what they're recounting, three states, because the outcome of the election could change if the results in those three states could change. And results in those elections are actually very, very close. They're tens of thousands, I think, around I'd have to look at the exact numbers, but the results in Michigan were so close that they literally just announced the results today. I think it was around, I don't want to quote this. It's
don't quote it because today will be tomorrow,
like,
and it'll be a month from now.
Right. But these are very, the counts have been very close in these three states, I think 10 to 20,000 votes, something like that. So, and you have large counties. You have these very large counties, like Milwaukee County is huge. So if you can affect a few thousand votes in Milwaukee County, and you can affect a few thousand votes in Racine County, and you can affect a few thousand votes in you know, one other county, Brown County, you can flip an election there. So you're not, people feel
it's
like,
not flipping,
you know, you
every
have to
vote
have,
in every district. Yeah.
You don't have to do that. These are tight elections, and there are a few places where you could put a little pressure on and you could flip the results without mm-hmm. too much effort. So, and it's not that hard to hack these machines. I mean, that's mm-hmm. really doable. They have been hacked over and over again. That's what I mean. They are hackable. So, and they are hackable from remote locations. So, for example, I believe I might have said this example on the last time I was on your show, but when J. Alex Halderman hacked into the D.C. Internet Voting Project with two or three of his grad students in Michigan, from Michigan, they took control of the entire election in Washington, D.C., including even the security camera in the room. They had control of all the votes. They had control over every race. They had complete control over the election, and they had the machines play the University of Michigan fight song when you were done voting. They did that just to prove like how much control they had over the vote. And the election officials didn't even know for a while that they had control over it. I think they took them a couple days to realize that Halderman's team had hacked their vote. And while Halderman's team was in there, they actually changed the passwords because they could see that there were inquiries from Iran and China trying to guess the same passwords that they were trying to guess. So people should understand that this is not theoretical. This is something that has been done by hacker teams. They have hacked voting machines. They have hacked into election systems. There were definitely hacks of the voter registration database earlier this year. This is something that can be done. And whether or not it has been done, we are not sure. But what we do know is that we need to move to a new paradigm where this can't be done. We need to move to counting systems where we don't have this concern.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that means that it's many eyes are upon it. The vote is verified. It's seen by multiple parties. The information can be shared after the fact and examined by multiple parties rather than somebody is, I think Bob Fitrakis, who's earlier a guest on this show, says that, you know, votes can be stripped and flipped. In other words, you know, 10 people voted for a certain party or a certain individual, and then, you know, 5 of those votes go away, and then, you know, they're assigned to a different candidate. So that's the kind of thing that's going on. There's also fractionalized voting where, you know, 10 people voted for X candidate, but then it's shown that 20 people or 15 people voted. And, you know, this is done, as you say, in certain specific locations, but places where they have this more transparent process occurring basically are protected from that. So, you know, the other thing you're saying...
I mean, I just want to say, too, I don't know specifically mm-hmm. if this is happening or how it's happening. What I do know mm-hmm. is that it's possible. It's been demonstrated that these hacks are possible. And if it's possible and the rewards are as high as they are, which is basically mm-hmm. control of the U.S. government, when you have that kind of incentive, one has to assume that it's quite possible that it could be happening because there's mm-hmm. a high incentive and it's easy to do. So, you have to imagine that it could be happening. And what we need to move to is a system where it can't happen. We need to move to secure and accurate systems. And I'll just run through some of the other reforms that, you know, that mm-hmm. are on the platform that we're putting together. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of voter suppression, and we need to really address. There was massive voter suppression in this last election in both the primary and the general election, and it needs to be addressed. It is unclear whether or not there are illegal immigrants voting. That's something that the conservatives are very concerned about, and if mm-hmm. their concerns aren't addressed, then they're going to continue to be concerned about that. So although there have not been any studies done that indicate that people are voting multiple times or that illegal immigrants are voting, it is something that it would we would do well to investigate that and find out so that the anxieties that people have about it could be put to rest or allayed. We also need to really look at the third party candidates, making sure that they have equal access to the ballots and access to the debates. Think about ranked choice or instant runoff votings, making primaries open to independent voters. That's a place where people really get shut out and aren't allowed to vote. Modifying the Electoral College so that the Electoral College electors are awarded proportionately instead of winner take all. That would really help the situation we have now, instead of, you know, one person winning the popular vote and not actually being elected. If the electors were being awarded proportionally, I think it would be much less likely that we would be in that situation. And you would also have the candidates campaigning in a much broader array of states. Public financing of campaigns, making corporate contributions illegal, universal voter registration, reinstatement of voting rights for ex-felons, really working with networks to make sure that they are doing coverage that is content-based and fair, and really presenting both sides or multiple sides of different issues. Ever since we had the Fairness Doctrine taken away in 1987, we've really seen the media move into much more partisan and much more opinion-based reporting. We'd like to see really good curriculums teaching civics as a participatory activity. That means you want to teach kids that democracy is something that they are involved in, that the government is something that really they can participate in and that they can control their communities. And the last one so far on our list is making presidential elections a national holiday. So it's a big wish list, but those are the kind of things that we want to see people get behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that all makes a lot of sense. What is it? Let's just talk a little bit about ranked choice voting, because this is something I think a lot of people may be unfamiliar with.
Sure.
I know that at my food co-op we do it, and it's actually pretty interesting, because instead of it, and I think it also eats into this whole partisan fervor, because it's not just one vote, it goes for one person, and then we're all lining up fighting with each other over that person. Can you describe what that is for people?
My understanding of ranked choice voting or runoff voting is that basically you put your candidates in your number of preference. So if one of the third party candidates was your preference, say like Gary Johnson was your preferred candidate, you might put Gary Johnson number one. And then if Trump was your second choice, you might put Trump number two, or maybe whatever. You put your candidates in order. Jill Stein is your first choice, but Clinton is your second choice. Or, you know, whatever your preference is, you put them in that order. And then the way the votes are counted, they do one pass with everybody's first choice. And if nobody wins on that first pass, then they take the votes then they move to people's second choice. And they eliminate people who were not going to get enough votes to still be contenders, and they move to your second choice. So that means that your vote isn't thrown away. If you want to vote for Jill Stein, but you're worried that your vote isn't going to count, your vote for Jill Stein counts on the first pass, so you can see who actually supported Jill Stein. Maybe she could get 5% of the vote that way. And then after that, if she doesn't win the election, then they'll go to a second pass, and they'll see, you know, then your vote would go to your next candidate down. If that was Clinton, then you know, you would, your vote would then count for Hillary Clinton, and on the second pass, then somebody might get enough votes to win. And so then that might be the pass, you know, where the actual results land. So my understanding is it's a little bit complicated in terms of counting that. I think I'm not sure if it's harder to count ranked choice voting by hand. It might be. I've heard that that's a possible conflict. But I think it's something that we really do need to find ways to make third party candidates viable. When we had very active third parties toward the end of the 19th century, the late 1800s, and when we did have those very active third parties, we had really some of the best voter turnout that we've ever had, 80, 90% turnout toward the end of the 19th century. Now, at that time, the turnout was only white men, but you had, you know, very high turnout numbers of eligible voters. And that was in large part because people were excited about those third party candidates and they came out and voted for them. And that is something, again, I cover in my film, the Holler Back film. We have a whole section on third party candidacy and how it's changed over the decades. So I do encourage people to watch that film. It's hollerbackfilm.com, and you can download it now and watch it. And we have some updated figures, updated statistics. We're going to have the 2016 statistics in it soon. And right now we still have the we have the voter turnout from the last election from 2012 in there now. So it's interesting to see like how the voter turnout has changed over the years. It doesn't go up and down that much. It's mostly right now around like 58-60%. So it's not, you know, it's just barely over a majority of eligible voters that are actually participating. And it would just be great to get more people involved and more people actually excited about good candidates.
Yeah, I think actually the idea of ranked choice voting is really interesting because, you know, one of the chief features of this election is that people were voting against a candidate and not feeling wildly enthusiastic in some cases about the candidate that they were voting for. And many people abstained because they didn't feel represented by either candidate. So, you know, that certainly says something. If there were greater variety rather than this two-party deadlock, it obviously would draw more engagement. And, you know, it sounds like that would be a good thing on many, many levels. And, I mean, it'll be curious, to put it mildly. I mean, it's kind of a big deal what the outcome of this is, and it's certainly a strange and surprising development that we have a third-party candidate, you know, it's basically spearheading the, you know, the recount against, you know, the wishes of her own party against the wishes of the White House. And, you know, it's just the whole thing is really – it's gone out of the box in a number of different ways.
It isn't, though, because I think people just don't have as much historical perspective on it as would be helpful, because it was in 2004 when we had an election that was highly suspect. In terms of especially what happened in Ohio, there's a great deal of evidence that Ohio was subject to a lot of election fraud, and that in fact the vote was stolen in Ohio in 2004. And it was the Green Party, again, who did a complete hand count of the results of Ohio in 2004 and posted those on its website. And I interviewed the regional director of that hand count in 2004, and he said that the vote totals were different in every precinct, in every county. The totals were different between the hand count and the machine count.
Wow.
I think what people do not realize is that we have had election fraud in this country historically. There's also Tracy Campbell has written a book, Deliver the Vote, which is just one chapter after another documenting how election fraud is part of our election history. And this is something that we really need to wake up to, and we need to own it, acknowledge it, and take the actions necessary to change it. Otherwise, we're just going to keep repeating it over and over again. So I want to shout out to people some other places that they can see my work. We have a website devoted to statistical analysis of the elections, and that's something you and I discussed at length previously. That website is electoralsysteminCrisis.org. That's electoralsysteminCrisis.org. And there we've posted some of the statistical analysis we've done so far of the general election. We have results there of the Wisconsin race, two counties that we were concerned about, and also Virginia had results that were concerning that looked slanted in favor of Clinton, actually, in Virginia. We found those results to look statistically irregular, but it looks like Trump is actually losing votes and Clinton is gaining votes as you move into the larger precinct. So we found irregular statistical patterns favoring both candidates in different states. We're continuing to do that analysis, but again, I'm pleased about the recount because a statistical analysis, at the end of the day, it's a statistical analysis. Let's count the votes. I love it that we're going to count the votes by hand. I want to see what those results are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very important.
And,
and you're still in process counting votes, correct?
Yeah. Well, with the statistical analysis, we're in process. Yeah, we're also looking for more demographic information, which is very helpful because the demographics definitely affect things. And people can also follow me on Twitter at Lulu Freistadt. That's LuluFriestadt. So do you have any other questions or any other things that you want to get to?
Are there any other organizations, Facebook pages or websites, books where people can go and educate themselves about these issues that you would like to recommend for our listeners or, you know, where they can go to participate in vote counting, you know, any kind of takeaways that people who are interested in this can get involved?
I do think the Election Justice USA Facebook page is a good page. I feel like Susan Shamblin and Paul Thomas are the activists there who really try to vet a lot of information and get good information going up there. I do check it on a pretty regular basis. So I think that's a good site. Ray Lutz is doing great work at Citizens Oversight Projects. That I think their website is citizensoversight.org. John Brakey is doing good stuff. His Facebook page is Audit AZ. And I think the Ballots for Bernie people are doing good stuff. They have a Facebook page, and even though obviously they're not focused around Bernie Sanders anymore, they're interviewing a lot of different election integrity activists. They'll often do like a long, hour-long live stream to they had an interview with Ray Lutz after he went down to Florida and supervised, tried to videotape the audits down there. So they're often interviewing people that I'm interested in, you know, in finding out about.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That sounds terrific. Thank you so much, Lulu Freistadt, for joining us today on Connect the Dots and for all your hard work and your ongoing work over many years and your work now that's still in process looking at the results. We'll have you back when there are more results to report and also as we proceed with the recount and everything that's going on with that. Thank you so much for the work you're doing and for being with us again on Connect the Dots. It's been great having you back.
Oh, thank you so much, Allison. And if people want to get on our mailing list, they can go to hollerbackfilm.com and just sign up for the mailing list, and I will try to keep you abreast of what I'm doing.
All right. That sounds great. All right. And thank you, listeners, for being with us today, talking about election integrity with Lulu Freistadt. Get involved. You know, you've woken to it. Now's the time to learn more and get active and participate. Thank you for being with us today on Connect the Dots, and we'll be back next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Be well.
And it was day and it was night, and it was dark and it was light. There was the earth, there was the sky. Oh.